Then let's turn our attention to the Bible for a little bit here. I'm going to begin in Genesis 4, so you can get opened up there. And I'll start reading at verse 1. I have 4 pages of notes, so that tells you what kind of trouble you're in. About 27 years ago today, actually not number on the calendar, but 27 years ago on a Sunday, Debbie and I were just settling into Central Washington Hospital, and Derek was about to be born. And my daughter's sitting over there just about ready to do it again, and thinking about some of these things and the population of the earth brought me around to what we're going to talk about today, and you can figure out how I got there. I've got a lot of facts and figures today, so for those of you who like those, you're going to be happy, and those who don't, tough it out, okay? Because we're leading somewhere with it. You'll figure out where we're going before we're done here. I will give you this clue. We sang that song that said, "Till Within the Jasper Walls," and we're going to talk about that because I like to. This isn't because I thought it needed to be talked about, even though I do. We're talking about this because I want to. I like to. Genesis 4. It says, "And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord." And this is not really what the connection I was talking about with the children here, but it's an interesting connection. "And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground." Now, if you listen to the purveyors of modern knowledge, they will tell you that for many, many eons, human beings grunted and lived in rocks and finally decided to live in little clusters, and they went around and they were hunters and gatherers, and they have all these things, and they try to tell you how society developed and how many eons it was before they became farmers and tilled the soil and all this. Here we have, in very short order, the first man and the mother of all living having offspring, and one of those offspring is a tiller of the ground, and the other raises cows or cattle or animals. Okay? Just something to notice how you can't make this, you cannot make the Bible and modern science line up. It won't happen. You can try, but it won't. Science, falsely so called. Verse 3, "And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord, and Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth." Got mad. "And his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen?" God demands an answer for this behavior, this attitude. Why are you this way? Which tells us something about how God feels about this attitude. "If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted, and if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother, and slew him." Children born, different. One tills the soil, one grows animals, or tends animals. They sacrifice, one's accepted, the other isn't. One gets mad. Story goes on, he kills his brother, and he chooses to do it out in the field. Today, people kill each other all over the planet. They kill each other in a field, they kill each other in a city, but we tend to think that crime is worse in a city. Don't know that that's demographically correct, but it happens all over. If we jump down to verse 17, we see something. It says, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch, and he builded a city, and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. And we're talking about cities today. And I guess what I wanted you to see at the beginning of is that we have all the makings of modern civilization in this story. We have farmers, we have sheep tenders or animal tenders, we have hatred, we have murder, we have the building of cities. And all of this within how many generations? Okay? And this does not agree with what we see in the textbooks today. That civilization was already on the way, that we have people desiring to build a city. We go to Genesis 11, starting at verse 1. It says, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east. If you want to know where they got off the boat, then this is a clue. They journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick, and burn them throughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. Where did they get the information to make bricks? It wasn't very long since some people got off the boat. And by this, I know I'm kind of going out on a limb here, but I'm assuming that before the flood, they were making bricks and building things. That they had the knowledge. They weren't just Stone Agers coming off that boat. Verse 4, they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And one other thing I didn't mention back in Genesis 4, we saw a pattern develop at the very first city. I'm going to name it Enoch. We have York and we have New York, and we have Delhi and we have New Delhi, and we have Salem on one coast and Salem on the other coast, and we have all these cities named after people, places, valleys, whatever, and these people want to make a name for themselves, and they want to build a building that has their name on it, that people will remember them by, and they have pride in that building and in that city. So they want to build this, and it says in verse 4, and they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And this word really means, like we say, that area that's elevated above the ground. So really what they're saying is, let's build us a city and let's build us a skyscraper. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence, or from that point, did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. You might surmise from this that God didn't like cities and towers. I don't think that that's the point. What he wanted was them to move out. He didn't stop them from building other cities. He just didn't want them to do this thing there where they thought, if we build this city, we can contain ourselves here and make a name and we'll be the center of the universe that we know of. He said, no, it's not going to happen. Confounded the language. And so they all went off based on their language connections. It's a lot nicer to live with somebody you can talk to or with. Or listen to. I guess what I'm trying to get us to see here is that a city was a pretty natural thing to happen. People tend to gravitate towards cities for lots of reasons. Yes, there are those people that say, I want to be beholden to no man. And they pack their wagon and they trot out in the wilderness somewhere. And they plant themselves. Oh yeah, but they buy salt and they buy flour and they buy gunpowder or whatever it is that they need to go out there. And when they run out, they trot back to the city and buy some more or have some friend bring it out to them. Because commerce kind of depends on a hub, a central place where human beings can come and do their business and interact and find out the news. And what happened to so-and-so? Well, they're living over here, or they're living over there. And it's just been a natural gravitation of human beings to form a city. We haven't even talked about this thing that started out with Cain and Abel, this thing called violence. That can be both a blessing and a curse when it pertains to cities. They can be a protection. You build a wall up and it keeps the marauders out. Keeps the next door country from coming over and taking your stuff if you can put it up in a tower. In Genesis 18, we're not going to read it, but I remind you that God said something like this. Yes, if we can find 45 or 40 in the city, I'll spare the city. Did God hate the city? Or did he hate the activity in the city? Because there were lots of cities that he... Let's turn to 1 Kings 8. I'm going to read 1 to verse 6. And we're breaking in the middle of this for the sake of time here. This is the time when Solomon is dedicating the temple. And he says, since the day that I brought forth my people Israel out of Egypt, I chose no city out of all the tribes of Israel to build a house, that my name might be therein. But I chose David to be over my people, Israel. But now jump down to verse 48 of the same chapter, and it says, and so return unto thee with all their heart and with all their soul. And this is in the middle of a big long sentence. He says, if your people come back, Solomon's making this prayer, in the land of their enemies which led them away captive, and pray unto thee toward their land which thou gavest unto thy fathers, the city which thou hast chosen, and the house which I have built for thy name. So Solomon claims that this city was a chosen city of God, and that the house that Solomon built there for his name had a connection to that city being chosen. And truly, if you go back and read in the law, throughout the law is scattered a phrase something like this, in whatever city or whatever place I choose for my name. And he never revealed that. But he revealed that he was going to choose a place for his name. In 2 Kings 23, further down the road here in the story of the kings, at verse 27, and Manasseh was a bad king of Judah, and Josiah came along, and he was a good king of Judah. And just as in the Sunday school story, grace was handed out because somebody did something right, here we have the same thing happening. And the message is sent here at 2 Kings 23 at verse 27. And the Lord said, I will remove Judah also out of my sight, as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city, Jerusalem, which I have chosen, and the house of which I said, my name shall be there. So we have the words coming that he chose the city, and that house is where his name is. And then we have the words saying, because of your sins, that city's going down, and that house going down. And we're not going to read much more. There is a lot of information talking about that physical city of Jerusalem over there and what's going to happen to it. It has its ups and its downs over and over again, historically. But that really isn't what's going to pertain to us in the eternal sense. And so I'm going to turn now to Hebrews 12, and I'm going to begin reading at verse 18. But before I do that, I'm going to give you some of these little factuals here. And feel free to check this out. Do your own math if you want. 70% of the surface of the earth, that's a rough number, 70% of the surface of the earth is covered by water. The U.S. Census Bureau, as of 11 o'clock this morning, estimates the population on the planet at 6,769,855,919. They are basing that on a formula. I don't think they're actually going out and counting noses. But this is the formula that the U.S. Census Bureau uses as of 11 o'clock this morning. That's the number that they have. 6.8 billion people, give or take. And they say that that is scattered over 57.5 million square miles of land. 1 square mile is 27,878,400 square feet. There's a fact for you. 1 acre is 43,350 square feet. So that puts 640 acres to the square mile. At the current population, and this is kind of difficult to do because my calculator kept erring because you can't go out that far on a calculator, so I had to move the decimal point and then add it back in. It comes out to the entire population of the Earth. If we split all the land up, including all the Arctic regions and Antarctic regions and the tundra and everything, we would all get about an average lot size of 0.544 acres. Which means each of us would get 23,700 square feet. Now you're going, what's he doing this for? But remember, we're heading towards that time when we're within the Jasper Walls, and there's a lot of people, naysayers, that say this thing can't work. So we're doing the math. That means that there is 1,176.5 people per square mile on the planet. That's square mile of dry land, okay? Which is not much different than if you took a square mile right here in good old Kashmir. That's about what we have per square mile. So we're kind of an average. Now, I got some numbers. These are available lots of different places, but I tried to get as reputable of websites as I could, government numbers. And I'm going to give you cities and populations and the density of those populations just so that we get an idea of how this thing works. The city of Seattle, for instance. Seattle proper, we're not talking about the whole area, we're talking about just within its legal city limits. At last count had 516,259 people with a density of 6,154 people per square mile. 6,154 per square mile, which is about 10.7 people per acre. New York, on the other hand, goes from 10.7 per square acre to 42.3. New York has latest population of 7.3 million with a density of 23,702. Per square mile, 3.85 times that of Seattle. Delhi, India, has 42.5. Now, Seattle was 42.3. I would have thought Delhi would have been a lot more than that. But it's a lot bigger area, and it has 14 million people in it with a density of 24,450 per square mile. Manila, a lot of you have been there, so you can make a connection here. Manila is almost double New York City, and it's 8 times that of Seattle. Manila has a 42.1 people per square acre, or per acre, 11.6 million people, 47,239 people per square mile. Cairo has 142.3 people per acre, 6.8 million people, 82,300 per square mile, almost double Manila. The United States, as a total, has a density of 77.1 people per square mile. We are 0.12 people per acre. Each of us would have 8.3 acres here in the United States. The farthest end of the spectrum that I can find was a district called Macau in China that has 84.375 people per acre, a density of 54,000 people per square mile for the whole region. Another interesting factoid that I have seen a couple places. The population of the Earth, if you took all the human beings on the planet and stacked them like cordwood, would fit inside the Grand Canyon. So before you think that we're overpopulated, you have to take all of these things in. So what the point is in all this is that people gravitate towards cities, that the population density in these cities is huge, that there's vast areas of ground on this planet still that don't have very many people on it at all, a few people scattered throughout. You fly from California to Washington on a clear day, look down over Oregon and Northern California and a lot of Washington and see all those areas where there's nobody out there. Don't have a flat tire between Klamath Falls and Bend, Oregon. There's a long ways out there with no noses to come in contact with. Occasional passer through. Okay. Now, I just want you to think about those numbers. So we're going to give you some more here, but there's some things we want to talk about the holy city, New Jerusalem. And you're there, and I'm not, in Hebrews 12. Set that aside for a moment. There is a substantial number of people that claim Christianity that view the holy city, New Jerusalem, as just a figurative reference to the church. Okay? And this passage is one that's leaned on fairly heavily for that, and let's read it. We're going to look at some other references about the holy city, New Jerusalem, after this, but for now let's concentrate on this one. Hebrews 12 and verse 18 says, "For ye are not come unto the mount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, nor unto blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet, and the voice of words, which voice they that heard entreated that the word should not be spoken to them any more. For they could not endure that which was commanded. And if so, much as a beast touched the mountain, it shall be stoned or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake." Now I hope we're all up to speed where we're talking about here. Children of Israel brought to Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb, and God spoke to them from the mountain. He says, that's not where you've come to. You haven't come to that. He says, but you are come unto Mount Zion and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. I want to keep reading. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh. For if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. So what I want us to do is picture in our mind things that can be shaken and will be destroyed, and those that cannot be shaken. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, cannot be destroyed, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. Now I want you to look back to what he's talking about. When he's talking about you have come to the holy city, the heavenly Jerusalem, an innumerable company of angels, he's talking about that in the terms or in reference to that which cannot be moved as opposed to that which can. Turn back to the book of Psalms, to Psalm 127, and I just want to read the first verse of that. It says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. And we have seen, hopefully already, God hadn't chosen any city for quite some time as his city of choice. Then he chose Jerusalem, and he said, this is the city I choose, and this is where my name will be. Then he said, Jerusalem is going away, and my house, that house where I have my name, is going away. And yet we can read prophecies about it coming back, and Jerusalem being there, and then Jerusalem being destroyed. Even in the ministry of Jesus, Jerusalem's there, it's going away. Read the parable of the marriage where he says, he goes and he burns their city, kills those wicked servants and burns their city. So we're looking for something that can't be destroyed, that won't go away. Turn back to the book of Hebrews, to the 13th chapter, at verse 14. We have some orders if you'd like to see God. He says this, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. One of the things we see in cities today that scares us is the crime rate, or that people just don't care. There's this massive humanity. Well, you know, a massive humanity doesn't really bother you if they're all happy. We like to get together in a big group, and we kind of like it noisy as long as it's a pleasant, happy, peaceful noise, and everybody's treating each other well. Verse 17 says, for ye know how that afterward, I'm kind of skipping over some stuff about Esau there, he would have inherited the blessing. He was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. For ye are not come unto the mount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, and with blackness and darkness. This idea that that we're looking for something that is, and I'm in the 12th chapter, I'm sorry, I came back to 12. I wanted to read that other part. I didn't give you the right place. 12, 14, I'm sorry. That this idea, if we want to see God, we have to follow peace. That you cannot get there without having a proper attitude. And like I say, the thing that we see that's a problem with cities today is that they are filled with violence, and they go away. Now in the 13th chapter, I do want to look at that. He says, for we have now, or here we have, no continuing city. But we seek one to come. And history is full of cities falling under other armies and being destroyed, going away. But he says, we're looking for one that will stay. And it's one to come. It's not here yet. In Galatians 4, the allegory, I would start reading verse 21. Paul says, tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do ye not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, otherwise by natural means. But he of the free woman was by promise. Yes, Abraham and Sarah were past the years of childbearing, yet they had one because God promised. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem which is above. And that's really the key phrase in this text that I want you to look at. Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. The argument, and if we look back at that whole passage in Hebrews 12, that people look at that and say, well, see, this is just really referring to you've just come to the church. It's not some real city. It's just using that as an example. You're God's building, you're God's house, you're the church, you're New Jerusalem. But what he's talking about is something that cannot be destroyed there, something that does not pass away. And he refers to, you're not come to Mount Sinai. You're come to the New Jerusalem when you have come to Christ. And the same author in the 13th chapter says, here we have no continuing city, but we look for one to come. Here, Paul says, New Jerusalem, which is above, it's there waiting to come down. Back to Hebrews, the 11th chapter. At verse 8. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles or tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city. And I want to stop right there. The premise that I started with was that human beings tend to gravitate towards cities. Abraham wandered around out in there, in that land, came down. He went to Bethel. He went to Hebron. He went to Egypt. Went back to Bethel. Wandered around in that region. So did his son. And his son. But that doesn't mean that they weren't looking for a place to settle down. And if this text is right, they were looking for a city, which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And remember what we read in the Psalms. If God doesn't build the house, if God doesn't build the city, it's not a continuing house, it's not a continuing city. We're looking for one that is to continue. Jumping down in the text, verse 13 says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises. And there's a whole host of people included in that, these all. Because it's an innumerable group of people. If you look, like the stars of the heavens, it says. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, Ur of the Chaldees, they might have had opportunity to have returned. Abraham knew how to walk. He had gone all the way over to Haran and down into the land and down to Egypt and back and was wandering around. He could have said, phooey on it, and gone back to Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers there where everything was. There was happening stuff. It was the center of civilization. But it has something to do with that get thee out of thy house thing we were talking about. Verse 16, but now they desire a better country, that is in heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. Jerusalem, which is above. We look for one to come. All of those that are descendants of Abraham should be looking for the same city. Revelation 21. Look at a few things there and we'll close. And I don't believe for a moment that I could do justice to trying to explain this city. So I'm not going to try to explain it at all. I have spent a lot of time looking up on the internet the different stones that are listed here. And what I found is that there's a lot of difference in some of these stones. Jasper doesn't always look the same. The emeralds are just one type of a certain stone, the green ones, and there's all colors of the rainbow of these stones. And so trying to figure out exactly what the order of color is pretty much an impossible thing to do. God's going to put it together the way He wants it put together. But it's a beautiful thing. But what we can see is it says, and I saw, verse 1, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth were passed away. Those things that would be moved, those things that would be done away, and this kingdom that we're looking for that cannot be moved, will not go away. And there was no more sea. Oh. Well, you know, I don't know if this is John saying that there was no more sea, Mediterranean Sea, because all the way through his vision, Revelation, he's standing there and he says he looked out over the sea or he saw something come out of the sea. Whether it's the Mediterranean or all seas, I don't know. It wouldn't make much sense that there'd be a Mediterranean still visible, because if you plop something that's 1,400 miles by 1,400 miles over the top of existing Jerusalem, it goes way out into the Mediterranean. So I don't know that I can answer this. A lot of people have read this to say that this means there won't be any more oceans, in which case, how much more land is there? But it says what it says. It says, and I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God. Coming down from God. It's leaving God, coming down. God didn't come down with it. It comes down from Him. A separation of this city from Him. He hasn't left yet. And it's prepared as a bride adorned for her husband, which most people would understand that a bride tries to be the prettiest she can be on that particular day. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and He will dwell with them, and they shall be His people, and God Himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Used to say at the entrance of Disneyland, the happiest place on earth. The very first time I went to Disneyland, we were in the parking lot, and a little kid slammed his finger in the door right beside us, in the car door. And I thought, well, there went the happiest place on earth thing. Verse 5, and He that sat upon the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And He said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. And down below follows all this information about this city and how glorious it is, with its walls that are two-thirds of a football field in length thick. And a stadia, you know, you can fight about the numbers. It says a stadia is anywhere from 607 to 630 feet, so that makes the holy city somewhere between 1,380 and 1,432 miles long. It's about 2 million square miles. At the population density of Seattle, it would allow for 12.3 billion people on one level. I don't think He's going to run out of space. And, you know, we talk, some people argue, well, it just wouldn't work if you had that big old city sticking up there. Who says it's sticking up? You think God could excavate? We don't know how much mass there is inside the city. We don't know. But the numbers, to me, work out easy that you could pull it off. You could fill that thing with people and have lots of room to spare, even if you just did it on one level. This, like I say, I can't do justice to explaining to it, but what we do is we try to get people in their imagination to be able to perceive what it is that we're being promised. And we aren't going to get all the answers to these things. But I'm really looking forward to going there and exploring. We can't explore everything in our little region here in Chelan County, can we? There's lots of places I haven't walked yet. There's a lot of territory that we're looking at here that's promised for the people of God. And what we have to see is this is a house that God builds, a city that God builds. It's not in vain. It won't go away. It won't have mischievous people in it. They will be good people, righteous people. It'll be a pleasure to be around them. I praise God and thank Him for the wonderful promises that we've been given and the hope that we have to have such a city and enough information that we can visualize it and see it afar off. Let's close with a song.